Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining us today. This is Kelly Barner, editor at Byers Meeting Point. Today, I would like to welcome two guests from Wake Forest University, Dr. Jim Naris and Dr. Michelle Stewart. Dr. Jim Naris serves as a research fellow at the Institute for the Study of Business Markets at Penn State, and Dr. Michelle Stewart is an associate professor at the School of Business at Wake Forest. Back in December, they both joined us here on BMP Radio to talk about how the customer journey has changed because of increased use of digital tools, and what that means for B2B procurement. Today, they're back to share what their continued efforts have uncovered about the impact of positive and negative reviews of suppliers on the decision-making process. Jim and Michelle, thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you,
Kelly. Great to talk to you again.
So as a way of sort of transitioning from the last time we spoke, Michelle, if I start with you, would you mind catching us up on the work you have done since we spoke in December?
Yes, so Jim and I have been on a journey. We mentioned to you last time that the popular press has talked about digital tools changing decision-making and how decisions are made. And we were very interested to see if that was the case in business-to-business markets. So last time we told you about the study we did where we looked at 50 years of research and looked at what models had been the most influential and conducted a variety of interviews, had a survey about use of digital tools. And this time we were interested in how things like online communities and online reviews may influence people make decisions, how purchasing professionals make decisions. And we were interested also in, did it matter if those reviews were positive about a potential supplier or negative about a potential supplier? And so we conducted what we call an experimental design, where we had eight different scenarios, and a purchasing professional read one of those, and that allowed us to look across different scenarios and make some comparisons about how online reviews, whether from a community that was external to the purchasing professional's company, or an online review from within their own company was viewed, and again, whether those were positive or negative.
And in terms of what you have learned to date, and maybe, Jim, let me go to you for this, and then Michelle, if you'd like to add. In terms of what you learned to date, have you found what you might have expected when you set out, or have there been some unexpected findings that you came up with along the way?
Well, I'd like to begin with, if you remember from December, we had mentioned the fact that millennials are gradually entering the purchasing profession and populating most groups. And we found a number of interesting things relative to millennials. And, you know, sort of going back to our initial premise that people are doing things a little bit differently, one of the key things that we found, particularly among millennials, is that they increasingly rely on reviews and communities as a purchasing tool. And a lot of this is shaped by the millennials' experiences in the consumer marketplace. So as you're well aware of from your personal life, there are a lot of sites out there that do reviews, including Yelp, Amazon, Google Reviews, Rotten Tomatoes, Kelley Blue Book. And increasingly, our millennials have expressed an interest to have the same type of review sites and group sites on the business-to-business side. And one of the things that we discovered is that, as you well know, there are a number of supplier and product directories out there, including ThomasNet.com and Prism. And increasingly, there's a number of new review sites. Vendop just basically came into existence earlier on in 2015. Amazon Supply, the Amazon Business Marketplace has reviews, and then there are a number of other specific review sites for specific areas. G2 Crowd, for example, for software. TrustRadius, also for software. And one of the interesting things that we found in talking to people in our survey, and Michelle, I think we had, 290 respondents,
right,
which is significant. And I think one of the key things we found is that there's actually a different preference in terms of these various online tools in terms of generations. So, for example, we discovered that millennials are very positive about external review sites. So being able to go to an external site and get reviews of products and suppliers is important to them. For Generation Xers, who now are in charge of most organizations, the thing that really rang the bell for them were vendor scorecards. And then surprisingly, baby boomers are very much so intrigued by online communities, which was surprising because, the reputation of baby boomers is that they're neophytes when it comes to technology. So we found that there's a difference across those. Michelle, do you want to chime in with some of your results?
Yeah, I think another interesting thing, Kelly, before we get into some of the meat of the experiment, was back to how people looked at reviewing a product. So purchasing professionals, in our personal life as consumers, we don't hesitate to give a review, whether it's good or bad. You know, we feel pretty comfortable logging on to a site and reviewing a movie or reviewing, a coffee maker we bought on Amazon. But when it came to the professional world and the purchasing professional, there was a reluctance to review and a strong reluctance to review if that review was going to be negative. So this is in the providing of the review. Our experiment was interested in people who are reading a review or receiving that review. But this reluctance of people to review a product as a purchasing professional, whether for concerns of, legal ramifications or reputation, that it wasn't only their own reputation, but it was also their company's, was quite interesting. And some of these newer companies that are offering B2B review sites, like the two Jim mentioned, the G2 and the TrustRadius, they're trying to figure out, first, how can you ensure that the reviews are authentic? And two, how can you encourage people to review? Because what good is a review site if there are no reviews? And both G2 and TrustRadius, which are reviewing software that may be used by business in the business-to-business market, they're asking reviewers to register through their LinkedIn, And the idea there is it's likely to increase how authentic the review is. But there's still that challenge with how do you get people to review a product. In terms of the interest in online communities, we found that business-to-business online communities or a place online that a purchasing professional might go to share information, to ask questions, to learn about new products, new suppliers, what's happening in the field, but in an interactive way, not in just reading your trade association magazine, that there were groups like LinkedIn, so there are groups within LinkedIn, so there's a group called Procurement Professionals, has about 300,000 members, or local ISM groups, the large ISM in New York has about 81,000 members. And those groups were private, so the conversations that people may have was only seen among members. And then there were industry-specific communities, the National Association of Educational Procurement Professionals, the NAEP, for example, also a site that you have to register to show that you are within educational procurement, in the conversations being limited to members. Other groups like PRISM, the Professional Retail Store Management Association, where purchasing professionals within that industry could also register and speak. So there's a different sense in with consumers about the openness of reviews than there are with when we put on our professional hat and as a purchasing professional to communicate about suppliers. There's far more hesitancy to review in general.
So let me just ask you a couple of quick follow-ups there before we jump into what you were describing, Michelle, as the meat of it. So have you found that there's a correlation between the people who rely heavily on these online reviews and the people who are willing to review? And a second question would be, how do people, whether it's millennials or anybody else, how are they going about vetting the sites and the individual reviewers to make sure that they're authentic and don't have some ulterior motive for the review information they've offered up?
Yeah, those are two really important questions. I think first with the vetting of site, there's so few now, so few sites that offer reviews of B2B products and services that the vetting hasn't quite come into play. I think this idea that G2 and TrustRadius have find some way to get someone who reviews a product to get connected to their company. So how do you say we don't allow anonymous reviews if that reduces the number of reviews you have? Because you need the reviews, but you also need some verification of those being authentic. So I think in B2B we've seen companies that are allowing reviews asking for some sort of identification, either a first name in an industry or, as these other companies, using connected to your LinkedIn profile so someone can see you're an actual professional.
If I could just jump in, on the consumer side, the phrase that's used very often that Michelle just mentioned is verification, in that the better sites are moving away from basically allowing everyone to jump in and sort of dump their bucket in terms of comments. And obviously that open access has led to, and there's been a number of lawsuits and complaints over the last few years about unscrupulous companies that basically hire college students to do these reviews. The better sites, and you know, Amazon is a good example of that, and also Google, has shifted to, you know, what they refer to as verified reviews, where they check out the legitimacy of an individual before they allow them to review. So in order for one of these B2B sites to work, and, you know, Michelle mentioned that Vendop has come online and that Amazon Business has come online, they're going to have to be verified review sites as opposed to allowing anyone to jump in. Now, the first question that you answered about, you know, the correlation between, people that use the reviews versus willing to give reviews, I think, unfortunately, that what we've found from our interviews, and this is particularly true in the case of millennials, is that everyone wants reviews, everyone wants legitimate reviews, but at the same time, they're hesitant to provide the reviews. And in particular, relative to the negative reviews, and I was kidding Michelle this morning about the fact that it sounds as though purchasing managers have taken mom's advice into effect, and that I can remember my mother saying, if you don't have anything positive to say about someone, don't say anything at all. And I think purchasing managers are very much so in that mindset. And several of them during the interviews related to us that they're very much so concerned that, if they give a negative review, that the supplier that's mentioned is going to sue their company, or secondly, there's going to be some negative consequence. So there's a tendency to want to give positive reviews but not negative reviews, and to a certain degree that defeats the whole purpose of it.
You know, and Kelly, there's two other points I would add to what Jim described, is that as a consumer, I give a negative review with very little consequence, but as a purchasing professional, I may be mobile. I may be looking for a job. There's other companies that I may wish to work for, and by giving a negative review, I've eliminated one of those possibilities. But then there's the bigger issue of time. With consumers, there's the issue of discretionary time, but it's even more pressing when you're asking a purchasing professional during an already hectic, tight life to take the time to review a product and service in which they're going to think very carefully about their word choice added another layer of effort that they have to go through on these sites that require authenticity. So there's some registration required. Now I have another password to remember. So there are a lot of hurdles for review sites in the B2B space to get quality, authentic reviews that are not only authentic in terms of the reviewer is true, but also that the review is helpful to people who are looking. I think what we have seen more of is kind of the old school, pick up the phone and ask me about a supplier. And for millennials that are very, very comfortable sharing information in that space, it'll be interesting as the field has more millennials, how review sites are used, if there's a little bit more comfort providing negative reviews as we see in the B2C space.
Kelly, one additional comment I'd like to make. Initially, you start off saying what surprised you. One of the things that we asked our respondents was how closely they identify with their peers within their organization and their companies. And we thought initially, you know, the millennials have the unfortunate reputation of being mercenaries, meaning that they're in it for the short term. And one of the biggest surprises that we found was that millennials more closely identify with their internal colleagues within their company and their organizations than either the Gen Xers or the baby boomers. So that was a surprise that the millennials actually are more in tune with their companies and their internal colleagues than other generations.
And this kind of brings us to, you know, the heart of the study and some of the findings we had from it. So we were interested, in two primary aspects. One being the source of a review. Did it come from an external source? So a peer, you know, from a trade association, but not someone working within the purchasing professional's own company. So was the source external of the source of the review, or was the source of the review internal? And the second aspect we were interested in is if that review was positive or negative about a potential supplier. So in the study, we explained a scenario in which a purchasing professional was looking for some particular software, and they had read a particular review, and we explained whether it was good or bad, or it came from the outside or the inside. And probably our biggest surprise was as it related to negative reviews. And what we found, you know, the hunch in the research for decades in the consumer space is if we read a negative review, that option's crossed off the list in the consumer space. And we found in the purchasing professionals world, there's a little bit of a twist there, and it depends upon where that source of the negative review came from. And what we found was, if it was a negative review and it came from an internal source, okay, it's a deal breaker. We're much less likely to want to go pursue that supplier when we have a negative review from the inside. But if it was a negative review from an external source, a purchasing professional from outside of our company, we actually had a higher likelihood to go learn more about the supplier. And this is really interesting because it suggests that a purchasing professional recognizes that the reasons for failure in one company between a buyer and a supplier may be different from their particular situation, and that it's worth exploring it to make sure they're not unnecessarily crossing off a supplier that may fit quite well for them, and especially in these early stages of decision making where the cost of considering one more supplier are not extraordinarily high, but the risk of not finding good fit or not considering all options seems to be somewhat higher.
I would also add to that from our interviews we learned that, some of the purchasing managers said that, well, you know, maybe our experience inside our company with a given supplier is limited, and, maybe the folks on the outside, our peers in other companies, have had a different set of experiences, and maybe they know something about this supplier that our people don't know. So it prompted the purchasing people to say, yes, we need to spend more time verifying or checking out this supplier that got the negative reviews to validate those reviews.
And adding age on top of that, Kelly, to what Jim described, it was quite interesting to us. So if we looked at negative reviews in general, no matter the source, if they came internal or external, and we looked at the person's likelihood to want to learn more about the supplier, millennials were far less likely to want to learn more about a supplier than the Gen X or baby boomers. And that, you know, whether that is because of their natural association with negative reviews as a consumer, whether it's more relates to experience, or maybe it even is a, you know, some sort of risk aversion overall, you know, those are still questions for us to look at. But the bottom line is, if the review is negative, we saw our Gen X and our baby boomers more likely to look into the supplier and learn more about it without necessarily eliminating them from consideration.
Now, did you find that there was any sort of similar reaction to positive reviews? So whether the source was internal or external, was a positive review sort of a neutral effect in that it didn't eliminate the supplier, but it didn't necessarily promote them into making it further through the process?
So positive reviews were positive. Positive reviews,
okay.
Overall, there was a very high likelihood to learn. Now, internal positive reviews compared to external positive reviews did have a higher likelihood to learn more about the supplier and consider the supplier. So source did matter, but not nearly as much as when the review is negative.
I would, just to sort of reinforce what you're saying, Kelly, the consequence of positive reviews is to increase the favorability of a supplier, but at least from the data that we had, it didn't prompt purchasing people to pull the trigger, so to speak, and say, all right, we're going to buy from this supplier. So again, it's a positive chip that gets added on the pile, which increases the likelihood, but it doesn't cement the deal.
Which just goes
okay.
to these decisions involve multiple criteria and multiple people within a company. You know, the big thing for suppliers is to understand the importance of a review. And I think internally, one of the opportunities, especially with millennials and those mentors of millennials, is to be able to think carefully about what metrics matter to a company and a particular supplier. And when interpreting a review, to understand whether those same metrics for a successful supplier solution were the same with the company that's reviewing the product. Because there may be very different, say, vendor scorecards from company A to company B. And if we care about things they didn't care about, or we care about things that they didn't consider, we need to make sure we account for that as we're reading a review.
I was going to say, our colleagues in operations use the expression necessary but not sufficient. And basically what that says here is that positive reviews are necessary, but it's not sufficient for us to make the decision to buy.
Now, did you inquire as to whether the increased use of these rating sites or of online feedback was in addition to what we've done in the past, which is typically you go directly to the suppliers that you're considering for whatever product or service category, and you ask them these questions, and maybe they provide references. So is consulting these sites being done in addition to the questions being asked of suppliers, or is the overall evaluation process changing such that procurement is owning a responsibility more for collecting information about these suppliers, not asking them for it, but going out on their own to do the research and collect external background?
Yeah, I think
I would answer that, it sort of goes back to a topic that we mentioned in December, and that relates to generations, in that going and talking to suppliers is something that the older purchasing managers are likely to do, meaning Gen Xers and baby boomers. And the reason for that is that they already have an established network. They already have contacts both inside the company and outside the company, various suppliers. The problem that millennials have is that most of them obviously are fairly young and fairly new to the industry, and as a result, they don't have a network established. So, as you know, it takes years to develop a network. So millennials, at least what we have found, are more likely to rely on the online services for the simple reason that they don't have a network. Now, you know, perhaps in the future when they do develop a network, they'll go back to spending time with suppliers. But, you know, again, there's a preference among millennials for these online sites largely due to the fact that they don't have, flesh and blood network, so to speak.
You know, this kind of goes back to how we started our conversation. There's a real opportunity, I think, for Gen X and baby boomer purchasing professionals who are mentoring millennials not to forget the importance of a face-to-face interactions with their suppliers, whether current or prospective, because of the reluctance, whether based on time or hesitation based on content, of people to provide reviews. So if you're trying to compensate for your lack of a network, a professional network, by using online reviews, but at the same time there's a limited number of online reviews until it becomes a norm within the profession, you're really handicapped in some way. And to help young purchasing professionals create their own network that they're going to need for the rest of their career without relying on a really limited space of reviews that may tend positive until there's more of a culture to speak more freely about suppliers, if that time ever came.
Now, I would add that also one of the contradictions or unexpected findings that we came up with was the fact that purchasing managers across generations gave the thumbs up to things like trade association meetings and trade shows and the like. And the reason for that was that they felt, and particularly national shows or conferences, was the opportunity that they could see demos of products or solutions that they're looking at, and more importantly, they could contact face-to-face peers either within their company or other companies and talk to suppliers and interact. So it was kind of interesting to see that there's a desire for all these digital technologies, but at the same time, there's a desire for the good old-fashioned trade shows and industry meetings and, again, professional associations.
Well, I think
and
what
you said
Jim
that was
described
across
is,
age groups?
Yes.
Yes.
Which was surprising.
And I
yeah.
think really important because it underscores the fact that purchasing and the decision-making cycle isn't just looking at a number 4.5 out of 5. You know, it's nuanced. There are distinctions that might be made between two companies, and some of that you can only get through, you know, a more rich communication context, which is often, you know, in a face-to-face context.
So no research like this is ever effectively done. Do you have a sense for what you're going back to do now, either with what you've learned or in terms of further inquiry to keep pursuing this topic?
Well, absolutely. There's more than enough to look at. For example, one of the other things that we came away with from this study was the importance of vendor scorecards. And I would describe those, at least at the more progressive companies, as being internal online reviews. When you go out and talk to most companies, they'll say that, okay, we do a vendor scorecard. We use them in either quarterly or annual reviews of suppliers. But a lot of the purchasing managers we spoke to bemoan the fact that the operations people are not very forthcoming in sharing them with purchasing. So looking at what is a good vendor scorecard, how do you distribute it among your people, and then how do you use it to make better purchasing decisions, from our standpoint, is something that needs to be looked at.
Well, certainly as you continue to learn more, please do keep us in the loop. I think this is a great opportunity, not only for procurement professionals as a field to learn things that they hadn't expected to learn about how their work is changing, but also about who we are and how our field is changing. So for anyone who is interested, I will share the link to my previous interview with Jim and Michelle on today's episode page. But Jim and Michelle, thank you so much for your time and for joining us today.
Always a pleasure, Kelly. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kelly.
Thank you.